Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Giustina. Back with us is the Republican Assembly Minority Leader, William Barclay. He's from the 120th District. Leader Barclay, it's always great to talk to you. It's been some time, but welcome back.
We're back. Thank you, David. Yes, we're back. Not only back on your show, but back in Albany.
Yeah. So let's start there because the session is underway. Here we go, 2026. And you came out with your key pillars to your agenda for the session. Let's hear it.
Yeah. Well, probably our biggest priority is no surprise to anybody because you hear any elected official talking about it, and rightfully so, is affordability, affordability, and affordability. Unfortunately, in New York, certainly during Governor Hochul's tenure, we've seen costs rise across the board, whether it's housing costs, gasoline, groceries, utilities, medical care, you name it, costs have skyrocketed. And I think you see that, you know, the voters are uptight about it, rightfully so, and as a result, they're voting a lot of their incumbents out of office. And so we're not naive to that situation, so we want to do something about affordability in New York State. And some are easy. They're not, you know, no easy silver bullet, but there are some things that can provide relief to the taxpayers. One, I've always said, David, is not when you're in a hole, don't keep digging. So we have a tax and spend mentality in New York. Spending has increased this last year over 7%. I think our budget now is something like a quarter trillion dollars. It's like $258 billion. So we got to get a handle on government spending because if you spend a lot, you have to tax a lot, and that hasn't been beneficial for New Yorkers. But we can do other things like, you know, I like the proposal that President Trump enacted with no taxes on tip or overtime. That seems like that's a good policy that I was pleased that the governor has now agreed to. So I think that would be a priority. We can also take away sales tax on some household items that will provide relief. And again, David, I understand these aren't, you know, as I said, the silver bullet, but every little bit helps. And we need to start changing the mentality that we've had in New York for too long, that we government can continue to just go to the taxpayers for an unlimited check at some point. That's got to end. So maybe because we're facing some fiscal constraints in the state, maybe this is a year that we can get it done.
You know, I point out, Will Barclay, Assembly Minority Leader, Republican, that obviously being in the minority means a lot of times you don't have the power, you don't have the votes to get your perspective, your policies, your proposals into law. But I've also seen from the Democratic side, or in the past, way past, when the Republicans were in majority, they'd often steal the other side's ideas and make them their own. So, you know, no tax on tips is kind of one. And then, although that's been roaming around the legislature, but, you know, how many of these new ideas you're coming up with will the Democrats grab?
Well, we don't mind. I mean, obviously, we don't need the credit. We do have the bully pulpit, but we are more concerned about good public policy than getting the credit for it. So I allow any of my Democratic colleagues to take any of my bills if they want to run with them and get them passed. That's fine. Fine with me, David. The one thing I will tell your listeners, if they're interested in our agenda, so we've really worked, you know, the legislature is only in session January through June. But that doesn't mean we're, you know, on vacation for those other 6 months. And we've been working very hard to come up with a real strong policy agenda to set forth what the Republican Conference and the Assembly stands for and the direction we'd like to see the state, so we can contrast it at what's actually being done a lot of times with the Democrats. But if anybody's interested, it's nygoppolicy.com. And it really lists all our priorities on there. And it's what I said, affordability is certainly top of that list, but we have other priorities, like, you know, we've talked on this show quite a bit about crime, issues that we've passed, policies that we've passed here that we think make New York less safe. We'd like to see some reform on that. Energy, we have some policy things on energy. We have some stuff on healthcare. We have a whole, basically, the big issues out there. We have some policy proposals that we think will make New York State better.
Can we talk healthcare for just a minute and the idea of affordability? Because those two things, with all these issues, there's the issue of affordability sort of wrapped within it. But thousands of New Yorkers now starting the new year with higher healthcare costs. The change affects Americans who don't get their health insurance from an employer and don't qualify for Medicaid or Medicare. They are facing these higher health costs this year with the expiration of the federal subsidies to the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. I've seen the arguments on both sides of this. In the end, it's costing New Yorkers and other citizens more when you've got the federal government now freezing funds for child care. And a lot of Democratic lawmakers are not happy about this. He froze child care funding for blue states, basically, states he was upset with. So those costs go up. And you had the governor working with the new mayor of New York City, Zohran Mamdani, for free child care. That kind of throws this into some trouble. So, you know, aren't the federal government's policies hindering affordability in New York?
Well, I think they would say, and I agree with a lot. Now, of course, I'm very New York centric, so I get very concerned anything the federal government does is going to have an adverse effect on New York. But I do also, on the flip side, understand that there can't be an unlimited check on it. I mean, it's all cost money. The money's got to come from somewhere. And how much more can we go constantly to taxpayers? I think because of some of this, you know, we talked, I think last time I talked to you about the Medicaid program and the increases of expense and trying to put some, in my mind, some common sense reform in there and how much pushback even that's gotten, you know, when we talked about, I think before, about having it, you know, if you're of working age and able body and you don't have kids, should you be on Medicaid? I think that's a reasonable policy question. And, you know, so can we do anything to reform these programs without it getting labeled as a cut and, you know, some sort of, you know, catastrophic event's going to happen if these programs get, you know, reformed? So that's, I think that's the difficulty they have in, you know, the federal government because they're trying to get their arms around it. And at some point, though, you know, there is limits to anything. Government can't provide everybody everything because, again, it has to be paid for. And the more you tax, the more oppressive government is and the less likely that there's expansion, economic expansion, you know, creativity and entrepreneurialism. So I think that's the balance they're trying to strike. Interestingly, you know, the subsidies you referred to, the Democrats were the ones that put the sunset in those, and they were only supposed to be during the COVID years. You know, it was a temporary subsidy during the difficult COVID years. So it wasn't supposed to last forever, but now apparently Democrats have changed their thought on that and think it ought to be last forever. You know, I recall when Obamacare was supposed to solve everybody's health care problems, but that didn't seem to be the case or doesn't seem to be the case.
Well, it certainly helped a lot of people afford health insurance and got more people on health insurance than there were before. The thing that I'm worried about is the messaging that's coming from the federal government in that one big beautiful bill by giving tax breaks to billionaires and millionaires. What does that message send to the people who are getting the crumbs on the bottom? We always hear about fraud in Medicaid. There's fraud in all programs, and it's not large. And so why say that, but then treat the billionaires and millionaires like they're clean? You know, they can't commit fraud.
Well, I don't think anyone's saying that billionaires or millionaires, you know, can't be criminal and have criminal acts.
But I'm saying the argument is they deserve this because, you know, they give the most to society, let's say. They employ people.
What benefits are they getting under the big, beautiful bill?
They're getting huge tax breaks is what they're getting.
I haven't heard that. I'm not aware of that. I mean, if they don't raise taxes more or they cut any taxes, because we have such a progressive tax system, obviously those who are paying the taxes are going to have the bigger benefit than those that are not paying taxes. But that's not necessarily just because they're billionaires. It's because they're paying all the taxes into the system in the first place.
Well, that's right. That's what I just said, Will. And my point is that you send a message to the people on the lower rungs of the ladder. Not everybody, you know, everybody is supposed to leave.
I mean, they increase. I don't want to get in. Well, we can debate, I guess. I don't know the ins and outs of the big, beautiful bill to really get a real in-depth debate about it. Other than, you know, they increase child tax credits. That doesn't help. You know, that helps people on the bottom line. I'm not sure that narrative of somehow the billionaires doing great under this bill and the, you know, less wealthy or the poor are not doing well. I don't know if I buy into that narrative, but that's really accurate. If someone can point me to where some billionaire is getting a benefit other than maybe having their taxes reduced, which is a natural result of cutting any taxes because they're the ones that pay the taxes.
Yeah, I think we heard. I think we heard GE didn't pay any taxes as a result of the breaks that they got at one point. And you know, you're a poor person, and someone's telling you that GE, General Electric, a billions of dollars company in profits. How about the gas companies that got all the windfalls?
But isn't that the concern? Isn't that what Mondami wants to do? I mean, they constantly want to go back to that well and tax. I mean, there's, again, I don't want to get too far because I can't speak to GE or whatever, but, you know, these are the job creators. If you tax them into being inefficient and unable to create jobs, that hurts the whole system.
Not
we
happening.
Worry about Mondami. I mean, you don't think since we raised the millionaire's tax in New York State, we have less growth in millionaires than any other, I don't know, any other state, but certainly almost any other state in the nation. So it does have an effect. If you start taxing particularly billionaires in New York City excessively, why wouldn't they move to Florida where there's no income, state income tax?
We know
why wouldn't they move to Texas? Why don't they go to North Carolina? Those states have increased their population 7, 8, 9%. New York's had tremendous out-migration. So, you know, the numbers don't, you know, show out that you can show that you can constantly go back to the taxpayers demanding pay more and more in taxes. They're not going to stay. They're not going to do it. They're going to leave.
Right. Well, what if we did this? I mean, you know, this is a hard thing to talk about because we're trying to stay focused on New York State, but so many things are now tied to the federal government and the impact on the state. So I want to go back to this health care thing. There's been, over the years in New York, a push, you know, sort of nascent behind the scenes. We even had the well-known head of the health committee, Richard Gottfried, now retired and gone, saying they had the votes for universal health care. Just think about that for poor folks who have families. Now we're talking about children. Why wouldn't it be a great idea to have universal health care so that that burden, that cost unburdens those at the bottom end of the ladder? And boy, the goodwill I think you'd get as a result and respect for a government action might come as a result.
Well, first of all, we already do have health care for those in the bottom rung of the ladder. It's called Medicaid. And we've been increasing eligibility for Medicaid substantially over since COVID, really. So I think it's, again, disingenuous to say there isn't health care for them. I think what Gottfried and others wanted.
By the way, I didn't say that. I just said, why not give them universal health care? Now, I didn't say that there wasn't health care. I said, why don't we give them universal health care? They do it in so many other places. We're the only country in the world that doesn't guarantee health care. The only country.
That's not a guarantee, but there is access to health care. I mean, even if you didn't have any insurance, you could go to the hospital. I'm not saying this is an efficient way of doing it. But you could go to the emergency room, and the hospitals, by law, have to provide you health care. I mean,
right. under a for-profit system. Why would we put profit?
Right, but they want, that's exactly what, that's what I was getting to. He wants government control of health care, and I think
You can have both. People can pay for the doctors that they want, the richest and greatest medical institutions, and then the people on the bottom can just get free health care.
Yeah, do you know what they already get it, though, David. That's what I'm saying. They already have Medicaid.
No.
They already have free health care.
Yeah,
they do.
Yeah,
it's a question. You're saying push it more up to, I mean, if you want to expand Medicaid, or
correct,
farther, I suppose, continue up the income limits for those that would be eligible for Medicaid. But that's a huge expense. And where do you cut it off?
Well, there are all sorts of huge. There's all sorts of huge expenses, but it's priorities. It's priorities. It's rethinking how we might make the best for New Yorkers. Not always thinking, well, it costs too much. It's never costing too much.
That's where I fundamentally disagree. I really fundamentally and ideologically disagree that the government's going to be able to provide health care at a cheaper cost than private insurance. I just don't see that. You see it around the world. People are coming to the United States for our health care. I don't see a lot of people going to other countries to get their health care where it's been socialized. And the cost to do it, particularly in New York, I saw a statistic, so don't quote me, but I mean, the cost to take, we spend in New York something like $250 billion or maybe $500 billion on health care. How is the government going to take over that cost? Where's that money going to come from?
That's the question.
I don't have an answer. I mean,
that's the question that has to be answered.
Godfrey, no one ever said how they're going to, even the progressivism, as you recall, wanted to do it in Vermont. The governor ran on it, said, I'm going to institute it in Vermont. And then all of a sudden, the dollars and reality of it came to life, and they had to drop it because it just wasn't economically feasible. So, listen, I'm all for helping my fellow man. I really do. I feel sorry for those people that are down and out, and we should lend them a hand. But there's also got to be limits. That's where we get back to the big, beautiful bill. Should someone who has the ability to work, doesn't have dependents, should they get government health care?
Yes.
Okay. I disagree. But you see, there you go.
That's it. But we're having a conversation. And that's what's great. And Absolutely. That is why, if people don't believe it, we really like each other. And that's the whole point. We have to be able to have conversations, not agree, but still get along. I mean, we're all Americans. I don't not believe that you want to help people. Of course you do. Why else would you be in public service? But at the same time, we have just a different philosophy here, and we're working through it. And I'm just playing the provocateur, if you want the real truth. I've seen so much in the political world, the political system here in New York, you could be cynical. But I just want to, you know, play the devil's advocate like I'm supposed to and offer the other argument. So we both understand.
No, I appreciate it.
Yeah. And, you know, let's go on to energy now, because one of the things I think you're going to agree with, and I think we may have already talked about it, is now the governor is moving toward nuclear power.
Yeah, I'm very happy with it. I think, you know, again, I disagree with the governor on most policies, but I don't mind her all the above approach. I think that, especially when it comes to energy generation, I think some of her policies might not really bear that out. But yeah, we need to increase energy generation, electric generation in New York State. And nuclear, as you know, I'm a big proponent of nuclear energy. I have three reactors in my district, two big nuclear power plants in my district, but it's the most efficient way of that we know of generating electricity, and it's also clean and it's reliable. And so I'm glad that the governor's, you know, talking about putting three nuclear power plants somewhere in New York. Look forward to that process. I know my county, Oswego County, has been very proactive, marketing itself as a logical choice of where to put the next plant in. But I think that benefits all New Yorkers. And I think the technology is there. And like I said, it's an efficient way to generate electricity and it's clean. So there's something that myself and environmentals can agree on. We're trying to lower emissions. Nuclear is help in that regard.
Yeah. And I understand the concerns on the other side. They're worried about the danger of radioactivity and all that. But at the same time, one of the things that I learned in studying this issue over the decades is that, number one, building of power plants has changed. They're more safe now than they were in the past. But the thing that always caught me was the bidding process. So back in the day, they took the lowest bid to build the plant. Will, if you could tell your other fellow Republicans to tell the Democrats who are majority power to make sure it's the highest bidder, not the lowest bidder, I'd really appreciate it.
Well, I do appreciate that. And yeah, of course, we want to do it safely. But, you know, I would say support for nuclear power in Oswego County, where we have the three plants through the roof. I mean, obviously, people are employed there. Their families work, you know. So, but at the same time, we're the ones that probably are at the highest risk if there's any issue. And I think most, you know, Oswego County residents feel very safe and confident with our plants and how they're run and their engineering. It goes on. I think we'd be feeling very safe, you know, building another plant there. So, you know, we're on the front lines of it, probably. You would think if people were really concerned about safety, it would probably be coming out of the people that live closest to the plant, but that's simply not the case.
Will Barclay, Assembly Minority Leader, Republican, and regular contributor to this program, so appreciate you being here. Now, let's talk a little bit about this pillar in your agenda going forward for the minority Republicans in the Assembly: expand job opportunities and workforce development. I see that job training's in that list as well.
Yeah. So again, there's an issue that we probably could work pretty well with our colleagues across the aisle. You know, we already have a lot of apprentice programs to unions. So we've supported those. We'd like to continue to support those. You know, that's one sort of interesting thing, David. I think over the, at least since I've been in politics, is we've seen, and actually Trump has done a lot in this regard, is a lot of labor now is supportive of Republicans, frankly, and vice versa. And so we see some benefit there because, again, you know, we're all about jobs, creating good paying jobs. I think we can align very well with labor, especially the building trades in that regard. You know, I just think of nuclear. There you go again, the IBEW, very good supporters, and they want to support, you know, additional nuclear power plants because that creates good paying jobs for their members. And so I think doing those job training programs, apprenticeships, is something that we could work very effectively with Democrats and with labor on doing something that, you know, that probably has bipartisan agreement.
Do you guys talk at all about AI and what might be coming? I mean, I'm concerned about it. I know so many are, that with new AI, that's artificial intelligence systems put in place, you know, you could see the elimination of a lot of jobs, including white collar jobs.
Yeah, well, certainly as an attorney, I'd be very nervous if I was a young attorney, because, you know, your whole job is writing and research. And AI can accomplish a lot of that very quickly and efficiently. So I do think there is going to be a change in the economy. I think, yeah, maybe you're right, particularly with some white-collar jobs, young attorneys, I'd be nervous about it. I say this. I do think, obviously, that it has to be regulated. I get a little nervous, although I'm open to proposals. I can't speak really intelligently on what's out there on the state level. But I also think it's something that probably needs to be tackled, if at all possible, on the national level, so it's a balanced approach, you know, across the country. So we'll see where that leadership comes. I know the president's spoken about it. I know there's some members of Congress have been championing sort of a federal-type program. But as far as the state level, if the feds don't act, maybe it would be necessary for the state. But I'd like to understand really what those proposals are and the impacts that would have on AI. I think it needs to be a balancing approach. Obviously, we want to use AI. We want innovation where it can be a cost savings, I think, is important. But again, just the idea of the term itself, artificial intelligence, can be pretty scary, and you know, yeah, who knows what the future holds for that.
That's right. Well, we are running out of time fast, and this is the political part, the real political part of the program, which is Elise Stefanik, the congresswoman. There she was. She was supporting, you know, Donald Trump in every move he made, and she was going to be the U.S. ambassador, and then it didn't happen, and she stayed, and then she's going to run for governor, and she seemed to be hard charging toward that, and then all of a sudden, without an endorsement from the president, and Bruce Blakeman, the Nassau County executive, not getting out of the race, staying in the race, Stefanik said, nuts on this, I'm getting out of the race and I'm getting out of politics. Now, I believe you, were you supporting her at first?
Yeah, I endorsed her.
Yeah, quite shocking.
It was a surprise. I mean, sometimes I know everybody's cynical about politicians, which is for good reason probably, but sometimes you got to take them at their words. Maybe really she wanted to spend more time with the family and just got tired of politics, apparently. And so, yeah, I was disappointed because I think she would be a great candidate. And obviously, I think she would have been a great governor. But on the same token, I'm very happy with Blakeman. He's done a great job as county executive down in Nassau County. He brings some different strengths to the ticket. And so I was pleased that Elise was running because I thought she was an AK candidate. But now that she's out, I'm pleased that another A candidate like Bruce Blakeman is running. And the fact, you know, he may have some advantage because, like Lee Zeldin, he's coming out of Long Island, some, you know, population base that knows him already. So he's got a leg up there, but he's going to have to do some work and get his name out and people get to know him upstate. And he's going to have to articulate, which I think he will, the contrast between what he can govern to governing versus what Hochul's done governing. But I'm pleased he's running, and I'm now fully behind him.
Well, Will Barclay, this is a tough one because it's early going. We don't have all the details yet, but we do know that ICE has been coming into various states and deporting people. And they've been going into courthouses even, which is not supposed to happen. And as we sit here on a Thursday after learning about the death in Minnesota of a woman at the hands of ICE, let's put the circumstances aside for a second. Is the temperature getting way too overheated with this? I mean, talk about scary. You know, this keeps going on.
I do agree with that. Particularly, I would urge, having served in politics for a long time now, I know sometimes you're tempted to give a quick reaction when something happens in the news, and we have such a fast news cycle that everybody's trying to get their, you know, perspective or narrative out there. But sometimes it's worth just withholding a little bit, seeing what the investigation turns up and actually understanding the real story. And it seems like with any of this issue with ICE or deportation or, you know, rounding up the immigrants, both sides seem to be out there. And I've noticed, David, that very often on both sides, frankly, it's both Republicans and Democrats, those the stories of how they're reported are not always accurate. So I think particularly this tragedy, in which is really needs to be defined as a tragedy in Minnesota. I would ask people just withhold judgment. Let's see what the investigation returns and let the professionals do their job out there before, you know, trying to make political hay out of the situation.
I agree. I agree 100%, Will Barkley. Let's take the temperature
there
down.
There you go. That's good.
See?
Go.
Take a deep breath. Let's relax. Let's see what happens here. We can all acknowledge this is a terrible situation, but let's find out more closely what the facts
right.
are. Well, finally, I just want to get your thoughts on the omnibus prison reform bill. I know that there are a lot of areas for reform on the Democratic side and the Republican side. And frankly, they're probably all worthwhile. Where are you on this?
Well, so I'm not thrilled about it. I think it's a little one-sided. I'm not against holding correction officers accountable. I don't think they themselves would be opposed to some of that stuff, cameras and whatnot. That's probably beneficial, but it doesn't have the other side. And really, we just went through the correction strike. We still have 2,000 National Guards in our state prison. And the correction officers have pointed out again and again, I think rightfully so,
sure.
that some of the policies instituted, like the HALT Act, are problematic for their safety in these correction facilities. And so I just would like to see that addressed. So when you say omnibus, that's great, but that doesn't really strike me as omnibus because they really took the the issues that were important to the incarcerated and didn't really take into account, I think, many of the very legitimate issues that the correction officers have.
Well, I guess you'll be back at the table again pushing it, right? You'll try to get them to listen to this.
Well, we have to because we have to get our correction system strained out. We can't, you know, we can't have National Guards in our prison for perpetuity. We have to get that system. So hopefully that will be part of the debate this year.
Well, I enjoyed our continued debate and conversation on this week's Capital Connection. He is New York State Assembly Minority Leader Will Barkley. He is a Republican, comes on this show, he talks, he debates, and that's what democracy is all about. Will, I can't thank you enough for joining us this week.
Anytime, David. Thank you very much. I always enjoy being on your show.
Support for the Capital Connection comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.